Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Welcome to In the Know, the Bourbon Street Shots Podcast. We're your hosts, Shamit Dua and Mason Ginsburg, and this is All Pelicans All the Time.
Welcome to another episode of In the Know. This is our last episode before free agency at the end of this week. Things are heating up all around the league, which is just coded word for tampering. Tampering is heating up all around the league. Mason, what have you tampered with this week?
my sleep schedule, I would say. been a long week, but I'm excited to stop tampering with that and get a good night's rest. In preparation for the start of free agency, but now it's not a midnight thing. It's a 6 o'clock thing. So I don't have to do that. That's kind of nice.
Yeah. It looks like free agency is on track to get you back on your sleep schedule. So that's a win.
Yeah. What about you?
Man, I haven't really tampered with anything this week. I should though. I should. There's probably some like Lakers fans out there that need to be poked. Anywho, moving on. Pelicans related news, because this is a Pelicans podcast. There was a recent announcement by the team. They have replaced David Wesley with Antonio Daniels as the broadcast partner with Joel Myers. David Wesley was obviously a longtime color analyst. Now Antonio Daniels is being brought in. I don't really have many opinions on this matter outside of I really enjoyed David Wesley throughout the years. He was one of my favorite guys to listen to, so he'll definitely be missed. Care to share anything there?
I personally think it's I'm looking forward to the change. I feel like David was always whenever I interacted with him, he was always a really nice guy, and I'm sure he'll still be. I mean, he's a guy who played New Orleans, and so I feel like he'll still kind of be around. But just from what I've seen on the broadcast when Antonio Daniels did the halftime and post game reports, he's very animated. He knows his stuff, and OKC fans seem like they're pretty upset to lose him, which makes me feel like it's going to be a good pairing. I just felt like sometimes the Joel and David Wesley chemistry wasn't there. And I think I'll bet Joel's excited for the, for the new partnership. So, and I think Pelicans fans should be too, even though I do think David Wesley was good. But I think this will be a good change.
Yeah. I'm excited for the new energy. Should be pretty exciting for the new times. The radio partner, one of the radio partners also changed. The voice of the Pels is no longer Sean Kelly. It is now Todd Graff. Mason, you are probably way more suited to talk about this than myself.
Graffinini is awesome. Beyond the more recent interacting with him on Twitter, because he was the voice of Tulane. He coached me at Tulane baseball camp when I was a kid, and he would never probably remember that, but I do. And he's just, I don't know, he's a great, really friendly dude. He's obviously, if you ever listen to any Tulane games, I don't know how it's possible to get as excited as he got for some Tulane sporting events, but football, basketball, baseball, he was the guy, and the Pelicans are really lucky to have him. Likewise, Tulane, rough loss for them. I don't know how you replace a guy like that. So, I think for any Pelicans fans who are not Tulane fans and don't really know much about Todd, they're in for a treat.
Yeah, by all accounts, this is a power move. This is like a superstar hire. So good on the Pels. And, you know, thankfully, Sean Kelly also is moving on to a national gig. So it looks like he has some bigger opportunities opening up for him as well. So good luck to Sean Kelly regarding that. More around the Pelicans news. The Lakers have finally managed to offload the entirety of their young kids outside of Kyle Kuzma. So they have moved Mo Wagner and a handful of others. Who was it? Jamario Jones and Isaac Bonga.
Yep.
To the Wizards. And they are sending their 2020 second round pick. And the Pelicans are getting back $1.1 million in cash. That satisfies the touch rules of three-way trades. Mm-hmm. I don't really have many thoughts on this. To me, this was a little bit expected. I figured that the bigger point was always about the date. We got to get this done by July 6th. And if the Lakers could open up, you know, their space by July 6th, then so be it. But that's the deadline that they had to work with.
Yeah. I mean, I was on the radio spot, it's just like an hour ago, and that was the comment that I made. It was just like every little point in this trade, regardless of what Pelinka did or didn't know about the trade date, every little piece of the deal was a negotiating point. And I imagine while the date didn't come up, the possibility of expanding the trade to a third team did. And I mean, we'll never know exactly how all the negotiations went down, but I'd imagine Griff maybe even tried to use this as a little bit of leverage, and who knows if it worked or not. But yeah, I mean, it is what it is. It's the Pelicans got $1.1 million, whatever. They've between the no trade kicker for AD, this trade, and the trade with the Warriors where we flipped the 39th pick for a couple seconds from Golden State plus a million. Pelicans are $6 million richer than they were a week ago as an organization. So, I mean, whatever. Can't be upset about that, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, I think the bigger news to me is the fact that Anthony Davis is waiving his trade kicker. Mm-hmm. Because he's now forsaken the Supermax. He's giving up $4 million in this trade kicker. And clearly it's all to help the Lakers. But, hey, I mean, I guess he's putting his money where his mouth is. He's all about winning. Not really sure what to make of it, but, you know, good for Rich Paul. Good for getting your client to continuing to give up millions of dollars.
Yeah. I mean, well, just wait until Space Jam 2 comes out. Everything will come full circle.
Yeah. They're definitely paying him under the table there. The budget's going to come out for Space Jam 2, and
they're gonna report a loss for Space Jam 2, no matter how much money it makes in the box office.
Yeah, good for them. So the Lakers, you know, they opened up a max contract slot. Honestly, I prefer them to go out and sign a max contract level player, so they fill out the rest of their contract with minimums. That would be really fun to watch.
Does that hold true for absolutely anyone they would possibly sign, in your opinion?
I mean, unless it's Kawhi.
Okay.
right? If it's Kawhi, then it's like, they could probably get a lot done with those three. You don't need much. But, you know, if they're maxing out Jimmy Butler, if they're maxing out Kyrie, if they're maxing out D'Lo, who are some of the other guys that they're linked with? Kemba? Sure. I mean, I don't care. I don't care if they max out any of those guys. I hope they commit long-term money to someone like that.
I mean, I'm a little more conservative than that. Like, I don't think they're getting Kyrie. It seemed, I guess I don't know anymore. No one knows what Kyrie's doing, but I mean, that Kyrie would still be scary to me just because he's younger. He's 20, he turns 28 in March. So he's still a guy that's young enough to really keep that even as LeBron ages, AD and Kyrie is still a decent core, even when Kyrie's 30. And that's when that pick, I'm not concerned about anything the Lakers do until 2021, 2022, that season. That's the one where you're probably getting you the first pick because I don't think they're going to have a bottom eight team in the year before that. So, I mean, yeah, to your point, I think if they go get Butler, who's already 30, and that's not as scary to me two or three years down the road. But if it's someone younger, Kyrie would still concern me, or any sort of star that's younger, except D'Angelo Russell. If they want to overpay him on a max, I'm totally cool with that.
Yeah. Well, you know, enough Lakers talk. The Pelicans have their own max space available to them. They recently renounced the qualifying. Oh, they didn't renounce. Sorry. They did not offer the qualifying offer to Stanley Johnson and Chiek Diallo, which should have been a surprise to nobody, but I know
he went out a little bit different. Oh, man.
Went out for Mr. Celebration, Mr. Wakanda forever. Yeah. Gonna miss that guy. He was definitely a high energy and a guy that was likable by all accounts. Yeah. But, you know, unfortunately, the production never really translated on a consistent basis with him. It is funny to me to watch all these reports come out that talk about him being a quality young big on the market now. And, I think there was one today. It was like he can be a Kenneth Faried type hustle player off the bench.
The podcast comes full circle because I was reading something on SB Nation this morning about a bunch of different writers picked one sleeper, and Ricky O'Donnell, who came on to talk draft with us, he picked Diallo as his sleeper who could be a value grab for a team. So, and I even saw someone, there were a couple people who talked about Stanley Johnson as a guy to go get on a minimum and see what he can do, which, I mean, you know, Stanley Johnson's qualifying offer was $4.5 million. You're not going to offer that to him based on his production. If you want to grab him for a minimum, I mean, I've seen worse moves, but yeah, I did think, I'm surprised. I mean, Diallo's a guy, if you look at his raw numbers, you say, oh, well, he's still young. He can figure it out. And I know until Zion happened, I was, and Jackson Hayes in combination with each other, I was still in favor of giving him a $1.8 million QO, but after they took Hayes, I realized it was not going to happen. So yeah. We'll see. Hopefully three years from now I can say I told you so, but that's probably not likely.
I mean, even if you do say it, like, right, this roster just doesn't have the minutes to give.
You're right.
Like, you need to be giving them to Hayes and Christian Wood and even Okafor, who are just all better than Diallo at this moment.
I'm with you.
But, you know, the Pelicans have now done, I think, three things in succession that are all signals to me of opening up space. They plan to be a cap room team rather than an over-the-cap team. So one was obviously dumping Solomon Hill. Other two is renouncing these players. The only thing that was questionable was Ja and accepting his team option. Questionable in the sense of creating room, but I think if you follow Jason Kami's, he had a nice little Twitter thread about it. And in terms of room maximization, taking his team option was the best pathway at this moment, as well as, you know, kind of keeping him on the roster and maintaining flexibility. So Jason explains it much better than I can. Just go.
It's also minimally guaranteed. I think it's $50K and
54K. Yeah. So, I mean, I want Ja on this roster. Ja is a fun guy. Yep. Not like Kawhi, though, but he's a fun guy. So the Pelicans have a ton of space. And with their ton of space, they're now being linked to pretty much every free agent out there. You know, I think every agent of a player is telling media or telling whoever wants to listen that hey, the Pelicans are expected to be interested in this player. The Pelicans are expected to be interested in this player because essentially they're just looking at the team, at the list of teams that have cap space, and they're like, oh, yeah, you know, Pelicans have space. Mm-hmm. We'll bluff our way and try to take our talents there in efforts to get a bigger, better deal from someone where we really want to go to. At least that's my interpretation of it.
And you could also, and the additional wrinkle here is you can do agents favors with something like this, and you can get in their good graces for if they represent a different player down the road that you want to get a meeting with. And you just never know how this can come back around and pay dividends. So it's every little thing helps, I guess.
Yeah, for sure. And I don't know. There's been some interesting names linked to the Pelicans. I don't know if you want to review them with me. I guess I'll try to get your thoughts on some of them. First and foremost, the biggest one that's been linked to the Pelicans, and Stein just kind of refuted this recently, but there is still like a lingering, like, hey, maybe is this guy coming? Is he not? Is he interested? It's Al Horford. Al mm-hmm. Horford opted out of his $30 million deal with the Celtics, and the reports were that he has a $112 million offer on the table over 4 years from some mystery team, and people are trying to figure out who that team might be. And the Pelicans are a team with cap space, and Horford fits the roster really well. Naturally, they were linked to him, and there was for a couple of days there was a good amount of national media buzz. Woj was talking about it. Shams talked about it in his article. Stein had talked about it on a podcast with Bill Simmons. Tim McElmon had talked about it. There were quite a few national reporters that were like, hey, Horford's maybe a possibility. And then recently Stein tweeted out that we are told that the Pelicans are not the stealth shooter. So who knows? Who knows if there is actually a real link there? Would you sign Horford to a 4-year, $112 million deal?
Absolutely not. I wouldn't do it. I get the people who say, I get the reasons that people would be okay with it, but just 4 years at that kind of money is too much for me. The only point I start to consider is 3 years declining. And even then I'm still in the no camp, but it's one of those palatable no's where he's a veteran whose game is already aging well. And I think eventually you fall off obviously, but I think he still does enough for it to age well. If you're not playing him major minutes, I don't know what else you could do as far as better than as a guy who could mentor Zion and be a good veteran locker room guy. So I mean, that's the argument to do it. I'm not really liking to pay a guy in his mid thirties into a 3-year deal or 4-year deal, given where this team's at and its growth trajectory. So, any thoughts from you that are different than that?
I'm just strongly against any 4-year deals at this moment. Unless that player is Kawhi Leonard, I don't want a 4-year deal. And maybe you can talk me into a super cheap 4-year deal, like something like 432, where it averages out at $8 million per year. But even then, I'm like, the player like has to be good for the next 4 years. And I'll be like, all right, I can stomach that. But I don't know. I don't care for 4-year deals. Just not my cup of tea. So, you know, sorry to say, Al Horford, you ain't the one.
At Blue Wire, we don't just partner with any advertiser. We want to make sure we're giving our listeners a good deal on a product. That's exactly why we love doing business with Harry's. Harry's is giving Blue Wire listeners a shaving kit for just $3. Go to harrys.com/bluewire and you'll save $10 on a trial set, which includes 5-blade razor with a lubricating strip and trimmer blade, rich lathering shave gel, and a travel blade cover. If you're not familiar with Harry's, it's time you should be. Harry's has fixed shaving by combining a simple, clean design with quality and durable blades at a fair price. The founders were tired of paying for razors that were overpriced and overdesigned. Harry's bought a world-class blade factory in Germany that's been making quality blades for over 95 years. Join the 10 million who have tried Harry's. Claim your trial offer by going to harrys.com/bluewire. All of Harry's blades come with a 100% quality guarantee. If you don't love your shave, let them know and they'll give you a full refund. Again, make sure you go to harrys.com/bluewire to redeem your razor for $3. Guys are terrible at taking care of their health. Whether it's a knee injury, bad luck, or something worse, guys are usually more comfortable rubbing some dirt on it than seeing a doctor. The same is true for erectile dysfunction. Studies show 70% of guys who experience ED don't get treated for it. Thankfully, Roman created an easy way to chat with a doctor online. With Roman, you can get medical care for ED, if appropriate, from the comfort and privacy of your own home. You can handle everything online in a convenient, discreet manner. Getting started is simple. Just go to GetRoman.com/BlueWire and complete an online visit. If your doctor decides a treatment will be appropriate, they can prescribe genuine medication that can be delivered in discreet packaging right to your door with free 2-day shipping. Guys, go talk to the doctor. ED can be tough to tackle, but it's really important to get checked out. With Roman, it's easy to connect with a doctor. Just go get roman.com/bluewire to get a free online visit and free 3-day shipping. That's getroman.com/bluewire for a free visit to get started. getroman.com/bluewire.
Anywho, moving on. The next player that's, I think today was another big name. There was another big name linked with the Pelicans. That was Tobias Harris. Mm-hmm. You were kind of tweeting about Tobias Harris's fit. I know that there's been a contingent of Pelicans fans that have wanted him for a very long time. And then there's also, I think he's a very polarizing player amongst his fan base. Do you want to expand on your thoughts a bit on Tobias?
Yeah, and I know our general thoughts are in agreement here, but we're making different points to each other today. But I think the Zion complicates things here. And Zion Williamson's best position right now for the Pelicans is going to be the four, power forward. And that is unequivocally Tobias Harris' best position. Over the past 3 years, he's been his numbers, the team, more importantly, the team's numbers with him at power forward have been way better. He's not a good defender. He's not going to keep guys in front of him on defense at the three. At the four, his rebounding is good enough where you can play him at the four where he doesn't have to be as quick and defend the same types of guys to get that done. And I mean, offensively, the fit is there. I mean, I think his shooting, his playmaking, and I think we may disagree a little bit on his the skill set he brings to the table offensively. But otherwise, I just don't see it. I don't see the fit with Zion as a pairing now. Maybe if eventually in 2 or 3 years' time Zion becomes that small ball five predominantly in your best lineups, like in that Draymond Green mold, I think it would make more sense. But with rookie Zion Williamson, I don't know. I just don't see it for the price point. I mean, that's going to be a max contract, $30 million a year, and I can't get there.
See, I'm in the other way around. I think if the team was Drew, Zion, and Tobias Harris, I think Harris would fit nicely. I think his skill set is one that complements Zion, and you could trade off on who they defend at either position. You just switch depending on the matchup. Zion obviously being the better defender of the two. But here's my issue with Tobias Harris on this team, because you also have Lonzo Ball and you also have Brandon Ingram. And Tobias Harris is a player that needs the ball in his hands a lot. If you look at his production when he went to Philly, there was a steep decline in how frequently he was the initiator in the pick and roll. I think it was something like 27% of his possessions were pick and roll possessions when he was with the Clippers, where it dropped down to like, I don't know, like 17, maybe 12. I don't know. It was a steep decline when he got to Philly, and his production went down as well, because in Philly he was behind players who needed the ball, such as Ben Simmons, Jimmy Butler, Joel Embiid. Likewise here, if you're trying to grow Zion, if you're trying to make him the best he can possibly be, you don't want to add another player who needs the ball in his hand, especially when you got Lonzo on the team and you have Brandon Ingram on the team. I don't think Tobias Harris fits any of that right now. That being said, I also am not high on Tobias Harris as a player. I just don't think he does much outside scoring. I mean, he's an okay defensive rebounder for his position, but he doesn't play make. He is one of the worst defenders at the forward positions. There's nothing that appealing about him outside of scoring. And frankly, I'm just tired of players who are just score first players and they don't contribute in other ways. So he's fine. I don't want to pay him a max deal that he's probably going to get over the 4 years. Not for
I don't know. I mean, the only thing I feel like saying that he doesn't do much besides score is a little, I don't know, it's unfair. Like, I think it's unfair.
Name one thing he's good at outside of scoring.
Okay. I'm looking at cleaning the glass right now. He's like 80th percentile for his position in assist rate. He is like 80th percentile or 90th percentile in defensive rebound rate. I don't know. And again, this is based on positions, not based on the league overall. But I don't know. I think he does enough. Or I mean, the steal block rates are poor. Obviously, that aligns with the fact that his defense is not great. But I don't know. I feel like he does enough off the ball to be okay. And I don't, like I said, I think it all comes down to price for me, and I just don't think he's worth a max.
You talk about his assist rate for his position, which is like okay, but his actual numbers are 2.9 assists per game from last year, career 1.9. Like, it's not a needle moving assist. He's not a needle moving playmaker.
Agree with that. All I was doing was pushing back on all he does is score. I feel like he does enough in other areas to be
a good. All right. Yeah. Anywho, I know there's like a certain style of player that I'm just against, and you've seen me with Etuan Moore. You've seen it with other, you see it with TJ Warren. I think he's knockoff Tobias Harris. He doesn't do anything that helps the team win.
Knockoff Tobias Harris.
He is. I mean,
Harris is so much better of a shooter.
No, TJ Warren shot really well last year. TJ Warren was what, 40 something percent last year as a shooter.
What is it for his career? Like 35, 30?
I mean, I think Tobias is also, so 42% on 4.2 attempts for TJ Warren last year, whereas Tobias Harris was shooting a cumulative 39%.
Okay, I thought Tobias Harris was a better career three-point shooter than I'm seeing. I thought I would see higher than 36 points.
He got really good recently. But he also sucked in Philly. I didn't say sucked, but like he wasn't getting the shots where he's used to getting them. And again, he's the type of player that needs the ball in his hands. Anywho, enough of Tobias Harris. I think my reason for disqualifying him is again that four-year deal. And you're not gonna get him for anything less than a 4-year deal.
Yep. Agree with that.
Okay, moving on. There have been, I think recently Sean Devaney said that the Pelicans are interested in Kevon Looney. And that's an interesting player for me because on the surface, he doesn't really look like someone you would want to start next to all of the Pelicans players because he doesn't shoot. Mm-hmm. But he does defend. He does rebound. He is very switchable. And he plays with a lot of energy. I have concerns about him. But before I voiced him, I was wondering what your thoughts were.
Yeah, I mean, I like that. I mean, he fits the timeline of the rest of the guys. He's young, and I think he's a good player. I think your concern is spot on, though, with the shooting. And like so many of these other players, it would come down to price. And I really haven't gone and dug into him enough and to his market enough to know what kind of offer he's going to get. Because he is your typical center. And like because he's never going to play the four. He's always going to be the five.
And he's like 6'9", though. He's like not even that big.
Yeah. So I don't know the lack of versatility there. I mean, I'm curious what his market will be and at what point the Warriors walk away, because I really do think the Warriors value him, especially given the injuries they're going to be dealing with and the fact that they're over the cap. They need to keep their current players as much as they can. So I think they would overpay for Looney, which is why I don't think he's a realistic get for New Orleans, but I would like him.
I don't see, I think if you offer Looney like 3 years, $20 million, I think the Warriors would not pay that.
Really? I think they would.
What? $6 million for Looney is going to cost them like $40 million in like actual dollars.
Let me know the first time that seems like it matters to the Warriors, because it just doesn't seem like that the tax.
It doesn't matter for them when it comes to Klay Thompson and Durant, but for Kevon Looney, you're going to pay $46 million or $50 million. I don't think so, especially when they get bigs like that for the minimum. Like they're going to get a Nerlens Noel, they're going to get a JaVale McGee, they're going to get someone that'll play those minutes. Then it'd be fine for the minimum.
Yeah, I don't know. Most years I agree. There's just so much cap space around the league this year that I think but there are also a lot of free agents too. So I don't know. That might be true.
My concern with Looney is the same thing it was kind of with Ian Clark coming in, is how much does he benefit from being on a ridiculously stacked team and those shooters and those players getting him the greatest looks? Like, can he be as effective on a different team? Offensively, I don't know. Defensively, that travels, that translates. Like, he'll be able to step in and contribute right away. But, you know, he has a really high foul rate. You know, per 36, he averages 5.1 fouls, which is a lot.
Playing alongside a rookie, like, no matter how good Zion is, rookie foul rates are high, so that could be problematic.
Right, but also, I mean, if you want to slot him in as a starter, I expect that only to get higher. You know, like, this is a guy that plays spot minutes on, like, the best team in the league. Mm-hmm. You extend his role, how is that going to look? I don't know. I have question marks about him. But, you know, that being said, like, if you can have him for cheap, if you can get him from, like, two years, $12 million, like, under the MLE level, big, hell yeah, take him. I mean, that's a rotation player. And again, I am a believer that Golden State probably won't match more than anything that's, like, $4 million per year for him.
Okay.
I don't think it will. No.
Well, I disagree, but I guess we'll see. I'm very curious to see what his market is, because I honestly have no idea.
Yeah. Do you I've been naming all these free agents. Do you have any agents you want to talk about or interested in particularly?
Yeah, I mean, there's a few. I think I feel like we've beaten up the big men to death on social media, but I feel like, and because the big man market is pretty obvious when we talk about guys like Brooke Lopez or Dwayne Dedman. But the tough part, I think, is figuring out what wings are available that would make sense that are lower than max guys. And so I'm going to strip Harrison Barnes out of here for a minute, just because he declined a $25 million option. So that makes me think that he really thinks he's getting something around there in the longer term. And I don't think that's a smart move. So I'm looking at, like, the next level down of players, and a couple guys that jump out are, I'm curious about Jeremy Lamb and even more specifically Terrence Ross. I feel like these are two guys that it's so hard to pinpoint the market for these level players right now, because there are going to be teams that strike out on the A-list guys in free agency and overpay some players like this. And that concerns me, especially given I don't know, maybe you still have a little bit of battle wounds from the Solomon Hill contract. But I mean, I don't know. I feel like those are two. I looked at Kelly Oubre a little bit, but I really feel like Phoenix will try to keep him. Justin Holiday is someone else I think that may, I don't know, maybe if the rim exception or something like that could make sense for a guy like him. But yeah, I mean, I keep coming back to Lamb or Terrence Ross as two guys that could make a lot of sense for New Orleans. Ross, I think, a little bit more than Lamb, because I think Ross might come a little cheaper and he's a little bit bigger. And so I'm not that size is as much of a concern for New Orleans this year as it was last year, having Lonzo and Drew and Ingram. You've got more size in the wing than you had in last season. But I think depending on the price, either one of those guys could be really interesting in New Orleans. And again, I think Ross slightly more so, because he's going to be a little bit cheaper than Lamb, and he is a little bit bigger, and that would be I do value the size.
I like both of those players. I like Jeremy Lamb. I like Terrence Ross. Both would be good fits off the bench for the Pelicans. Hopefully they're not looking for starting roles at this point, because I'm not sure the Pelicans can offer them. Both of them kind of do.
Even if that would make sense for either one of them to have Ingram come off the bench as a sixth man, but that'll get you flamed by all of Lakers converted Pelicans Twitter.
Yeah, okay. All right.
Sorry to interrupt. Go ahead.
Yeah, sure. Good for Ingram. But I like Terrence Ross. I think he was – Mac's going to hate this word. I think he was underrated in Orlando this year. I really do. I mean, again, you look at a guy who can really shoot the ball. Terrence Ross was making – how many threes did he make this year? He made 2.7 threes per game, which is a crap ton. He made a total of – 217 threes.
Did he?
That's wild.
Did he get any votes for most improved this year?
I don't think so. I don't know. I didn't look at any of the award ballots. Oh, which I guess those came out since we last recorded, and Pelicans didn't win. Diddly.
Nor I don't think a New Orleans player got a single vote for anything.
Yeah. I mean, typically you expect, you know, Anthony Davis to be on the votes for the various awards, but we all know what happened.
Yeah.
So the maximum, so if you look, if you go down the Pelicans list, Darius Miller made the most threes at 133. Terrence Ross made 217. That'd be a nice Darius Miller replacement, don't you think?
Yeah, it's an Etan Moore who actually wants to shoot.
Yeah, for real. It's got a
quick, I say that, not you. I don't know what's happening here.
Quick trigger. And Jeremy Lamb also, he flashed some versatility in Charlotte. He showed that he can do a little bit of secondary playmaking. He rebounds the ball decently. And again, just another guy, his three-point percentage wasn't that high, but he isn't afraid to shoot it. He made about 1.5 per game. But he can score in various ways. So I think, again, just getting one of those glue guys whose age timeline isn't too far away from Drew's either would be a nice addition on the bench. Mac's been hyping up Rudy Gay. I could be talked into Rudy Gay. I don't want to be talked into Rudy Gay.
Yep.
I think he's really figured out his late career role. I think he ends up staying in San Antonio for like something like 3 years, $30 million.
So he's almost 33. He had an aberration of a 3-point shooting year last season. I mean, story of, I don't trust anything I'm seeing with his 3-point shooting numbers, because he's gone from 36, 34, 37, 32, 40 in his last 5 years. And so I just, I don't think he's someone you can rely on to knock down jumpers consistently. He's not going to play a heavy role, obviously. And I don't know. I just don't see, I think there are better bargains than him, unless you're looking at him as just a stable vet, which is fair.
Yeah, there's a decent number of those like weird wings on the market. I mean, you have Damari Carroll, you have Trevor Ariza, you have Danny Green, you have, I think those are your more like closer like the top tier wings that are probably going to get a fair amount of attention from contenders and teams that have cap and positional needs there. Yeah. But then you have like the next tier, which is kind of like the Justin Holidays of the group, you know, which again, I think all of those players can fit in with the Pelicans, because the Pelicans just need players, period. They need guys who are ready to contribute, guys who have been around the league and understand how it works to guide the younger players. So it's going to be interesting. I am 100% in the camp of the Pelicans splitting out their cap into multiple players rather than putting it all in one basket.
Yep. Yeah, I'm with you there. I don't see that. It's because the guys that you'd offer a max to, the guys you really want on that salary, you're not getting, and the guys that will take it in from New Orleans, it's an overpay. And that's just history for small markets. But I think the Pelicans need to do a little bit more before they really can get into the conversation with these max, these real top tier free agents. And in that case, just split it. Are you totally against the using your, some of your cap space as a dumping ground, and not for a guy who can't play, but maybe for like a, I mean, obviously we talked this morning about how Charlotte probably isn't, if they let Kemba Walker go, maybe they're not going to try to dump their contracts, but a guy like a Marvin Williams or an MKG who could be a rotation player and just is overpaid. Are you considering that still? Or do you want to go out?
Yeah, I mean, for the right player, I'm 100% down with that strategy. I've already said like, I would take Gallinari off the Clippers, and if they want to open up a second max, sure. I think there are several players that can fit into the mold of this guy is playable, and he is also, you can probably get an asset for taking on this player. I'm about that. I think the Pelicans will likely have a good indication of if those are possibilities before heading into free agency, because the reason most of the time teams would want to dump these players is because they're trying to sign other free agents themselves and need the room. So hopefully that's all sorted out before July 1. Like the thought I was thinking of was Minnesota, who is very,
I was just on, pulling up their roster.
Right. Well, they're very keen on trying to get D'Angelo Russell. They have negative $4 million in cap space. So they could dump Jeff Teague and Robert Covington together and not take any salary back, and they basically have a room for D'Angelo Russell. Now, mm-hmm. If Minnesota came to you and it's like, hey, you take Robert Covington and Jeff Teague, and here's a future first-round pick.
I would do it without the pick.
You would do it without the pick?
I would do one more year of Teague and get you Robert Covington on a great contract. Yeah, hell yeah, I'm doing that.
Okay. I mean, yeah, I think it's not a bad deal because those are very useful players that can play that fit positions of need on the Pelicans. But you're also blowing your entire $32 million in cap space on those two players.
Yeah, but you're back in the – and I know the free agent market isn't going to be particularly great next year, but you're back in it. I mean, Jeff Teague's getting $19 million, then he's free agent next summer. I mean, and you can – I mean, I think you're still sitting pretty because you have no bad contracts on the books. I mean, I would do that.
Would you – if they try to force Gorgui Dieng on you instead of Teague, what kind of compensation would you need?
Yeah, then we're talking picks because that's an extra year, and he is. I don't think he's unplayable, but he's not. He's not the worst fit in the world next to Zion because he can step out and make a mid-range jumper. But that's going to require picks. I'm not sure how much, but it's going to take. It would probably take a first alongside Jang to make that.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, I think. I could probably be talked into Jang, but you're right. Yeah, with picks. Unprotected. JK.
What about Miami?
Miami has some interesting players.
That's a shit show of a cap.
Shit show. They don't really have assets. I think what's his face? Kelly Olynyk would be a playable player on this team and kind of spaces the floor. You could probably start him at center. I don't want his contract. So, like, what am I getting in return for him? I think Justice Winslow would be interesting on this team. I don't think they want to give him up. Obviously, Josh Richardson is a dream. I don't think they're giving them up. Bam, they're not giving him up. So they have, what, Deion Waiters, Hassan Whiteside, James Johnson, all of which are awful contracts. Which no. So Kelly Olynyk is, like, the one. Well, okay, no. Goran Dragic. Mm-hmm. He has 1 year left. I would take him.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, definitely. I think that's I think a team would still have to pay Miami to take him. I mean, it's $19 million expiring, and he's still a positive player.
I don't think any team will pay to take him. I could be wrong, though. Really? I just don't think. Yeah, I don't think any team.
No, I don't think that would happen this summer. I think in season, I think his value goes up.
Yeah.
You don't think so? You liked him a lot last year. What happened? Injuries?
No, I just don't think. That teams who need a point guard are willing to pay for him right now. And like who I'm trying to think of like the teams that have a need there as a starting or backup point guard that would pay for him for half a year. And you're kind of looking at something like the George Hill trade that happened with Milwaukee, which they needed a backup guy. But I just can't think of the team that makes sense here. So
yeah, I haven't thought about it, but yeah,
I think it ends up being like the Jeremy Lin situation in Atlanta where no one wanted him and he ended up being bought out.
Oh, you know, what's an interesting wrinkle. I forgot about this, but Ryan Anderson, because of that weird deal that he agreed to when he traded to the Phoenix, his salary is only, so it's his salary for next year is 21.25, but he's only 15.65 guaranteed. I forgot that they renegotiated that to make that trade work.
Yeah, why did Ryan give up that money?
I don't know. One of life's
Phoenix greatest that bad. I mean, shit.
One of life's greatest mysteries. But yeah, I wonder if you're Miami, are you definitely cutting him before that guarantee date, or even though you're still on the hook for essentially 75% of his contract?
Yeah, who knows?
Yeah. No, that's
I don't know. It's Ryan Anderson.
Yeah,
I don't care. I mentioned Jeremy Lin. I think he'd be a neat pickup for this team. He's had experience with these young guns on the Lakers squad before.
Dude, I'm already in over. We are collectively in over our heads with all the Lakers player stands, and now you're gonna push Jeremy Lin stands on us too.
Yeah, man. Just gotta more people for the hype train. That's how we get Zion voted to All Star captain.
Lin wasn't hurt in the playoffs, right? He just wasn't in the rotation.
Yeah, he just wasn't. I mean, Fred VanVleet, baby.
Yeah.
Right. Who needs Jeremy Lin when you got Fred MVP? Okay. I think, yeah, Lin would be fine at a reasonable deal. There are three bigs that I don't think we touched on. I'd be interested in one of them. I think my top choice out of all of them would be Derek Favors, who technically Utah has a team option on, but somehow he's treating his free, he's treating the next week or so like he is an actual free agent, which I don't understand how that works. But I, he would be someone I'd happily commit a 3-year, $60 million deal to. Not really question it. I also, I'm intrigued by Valanciunas. I'm not going to lie. I think people are going to question that fit because Valanciunas, they're going to say, like, well, he doesn't, he might not run the floor. He doesn't really create space. Yeah, I hear those concerns. I think he's a solid big that can provide you production night in and night out and give you a different look with Zion that you're going to have with Jackson Hayes. And I think I think there's a possibility he can extend his range. Now, I could be horribly wrong on that, and he could be none of that. I could, the signing could blow up in my favor, but that's why I think like you could probably get Valanciunas for something like 340, something in the $14 million range.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, Jason must be so proud of you. He's been on the Valanciunas train for a while now, for years. But yeah, I mean, he's a, I haven't looked at his volume, but he's a career 35.7% 3-point shooter. That's gotta be a low volume, but, Yeah, it's 45 for 126 in his career, which is kind of weird. Like, I feel like you don't see players with that low volume who shoot the three that well. He made 30 of
70. Saying that, like, you know, before the 27th birthday, like Brook Lopez and Marc Gasol had barely shot any threes, right?
Yeah, I forgot about how young he is. I didn't realize
and,
that.
And everyone wants Brook Lopez. Everyone wants Brook Lopez, but I think people should be looking for the next Brook Lopez. Who is the next big man that you can turn into a high volume shooter beyond the arc? And maybe Val is the guy. I mean, he is a high 78.6% free throw shooter for his career, has had a few seasons in the 80s. The mechanics might be there. The shot might be there. The touch might be there. So,
and then he can tell Jackson Hayes how to do it.
Right. Of course, because that's how teaching works.
Yeah. I did not realize he just turned 27. If you had asked me how old Valanciunas was, I would have told you 29.
Yeah, he's 30. A young dude entering his prime. You could potentially have a bargain with him. I like Vucevic a lot. I like him more so than Horford, and I would be willing to commit 4 years to Vucevic over Horford any day of the week. I don't want him at like 120 mil. Ideally, obviously, you're talking 3 year rangers, 3 years 100 mil. I could talk myself into. But I think Vucevic is a player who, again, I think you could turn him into a high-volume three-point shooter. I think he's one of those guys who has a shooting ability and the touch. He has had historically good mid-range percentages throughout his career. So I don't think it's unreasonable to see him extending that beyond the arc. I also think that he is a guy who David Griffin calls a possession terminator. He rebounds the ball, ends the possession right there. Brook Lopez has always made his team better at defensive rebounding because he's a phenomenal boxer outer, but he's not someone that ends the possession himself. And I think there's an inherent advantage to having a guy that terminates possessions on this team because it allows Zion to streak out in transition. You're not putting the responsibility on Zion to go get the rebounds and then go push the ball up the floor. You're telling him to go be the matchup nightmare that you are. Someone else is going to rebound the ball. We're going to outlet it to you. So I kind of like that fit.
I don't know if he fits the pace that Gentry wants to play at. I mean, he's not just because of who he is, not just looking at him, but like, I bet he did not play the Magic were a bottom 10 pace team last year. Like, he did not play a fast in that type of offense. And I don't know if he's suited for something for that run and gun type of mentality. I could be totally wrong, and I haven't watched enough of him to know. But that would be the main drawback.
I don't disagree with you. I think that you probably could have said the same for Brook Lopez 2 years ago. Would have been the same criticism.
Fair enough.
Where you're like, all right, you know, this guy is a low post monster. He can score stuff in the mid range. It'd be kind of crazy to sign him. And then he went to LA, started shooting threes, and then now he's in Milwaukee, who is obviously a transition heavy team. Yeah. And they just launched threes. So I do agree with you that so far the evidence supports that Vucevic hasn't really played on a high-tempo team, so it's difficult to project it out. But I'm not entirely sure it, like, precludes him from being good at it, though.
Okay, yeah, that's fair.
So, I mean, those are my thoughts. Those are the three bigs that I'm kind of interested in. I think in a perfect world, the Pelicans nab, you know, one of those wings that you talked about, Terrence Ross or Jeremy Lamb or some of those lower end wings like Damari Carroll, maybe Trevor Ariza. And then ideally they land one of the bigs. Honestly, I don't care what combination they really go with. As long as those are kind of the two positions we're targeting. I think the last position you kind of want to target is that backup playmaker point guard type thing. And I think there was some discussion on Twitter about how, you know, between Ingram and Ball and Drew, you kind of have your point guard-ish or playmaking duties mm-hmm. wrapped up. So you don't really need to necessarily go for like a traditional point per se. You can go for, you know, a Darren Collison or someone of that sort, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, I think you could also, assuming that every player on the Pelicans right now is still going to be on the team opening day, I think you can figure out ways to stagger lineups. And so even if you're of the opinion that, oh, you can't bring Brandon Ingram off the bench, like you can stagger things such that he is, you know, he becomes the playmaker late first quarter or something like that, and starts but still plays as the lead ball handler for the second unit and kind of get around some of those needs, but yeah, I mean, I think if you're stack ranking the priorities for this team, it's on that list. It's not the top, but it's on there.
Okay, I have one final question for you as we wrap up this podcast. I asked this on Twitter, and it's split 50-50 evenly. Do the Pelicans have a deal agreed upon by 6:01 Eastern on Sunday?
No.
That's no?
No.
Okay, well, as is all things balance, I will go with yes. to make the poll even perpetually. Okay. That is all I got for you today, Mason. It's all I got for you today, listeners. All right. Hopefully you guys enjoyed this and maybe we'll make some fireworks on free agency. Till next time.
Nice pun. 4th of July coming up. Like it.
Yes, sir. All right. Later.